This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Here's another Saturday Magazine podcast brought to you by Joy sponsor, Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12.
Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9, Macca and Tass. Adam Carr is our resident sophologist. And, you know, Tass, you love that term, don't you?
It's a great word.
It's a great word.
It's a great word.
It's a great word. How do you spell it?
P-S-E-P-H-O-L-O-I-G-I-S-T.
Yeah, it sounds about right. I don't know.
It comes from two Greek words.
Yeah.
The study of voting there or elections.
Go. There you go. So it's actually...
Sephos logos.
Sephos.
There you go. Good morning, Adam.
It's because the Greeks voted by casting pebbles into urns, and sephos is the Greek word for pebble.
I didn't know that.
Good morning.
Well, there you go.
Well, now you do.
Yeah.
It must be an ancient Greek term, of course. Adam, it's not one that I would be familiar with.
It's not the modern Greek word for pebble?
Not that I know of.
He doesn't know what the modern Greek word
is
for
pebble. Well, I'd call it a betra, which means stone. Pebble, I don't know what the word for pebble is. I'd have to look it up.
Petraki.
Petraki. Yeah, well, that's not Psephos.
Anyway.
Now, I don't know whether you heard Michael Kroger... Michael said that the Labor Party, have a legion of people trawling social media for the history of candidates. But the Liberal Party don't really do that. Hence why sometimes some of their candidates, it appears they've got an unfortunate history with things. And we asked Michael about this and said, look, you'd said previously, Michael, there wasn't, that you didn't actually have time always to do due diligence on candidates. Well, you know when the election's going to be. In Victoria, they're fixed terms. Federally, you know when it has to be by.
Do you buy that, Adam? Do you buy his arguments?
Well, well, it's true that every party at one time or another has had embarrassments with candidates, but doing due diligence on candidates is much easier than it used to be because all this stuff is findable online. And if the Liberal Party haven't properly, backgrounded their candidates, it's nobody's fault but their own. But it's true that it's not only a problem that the Liberals have. No. I mean, we remember from the state election, the Greens had a couple of embarrassments for some of their candidates. And, of course, it has happened to Labor in the past. But I think it's true at the moment our research is superior to theirs. But doubtless they will now try and catch up.
I did offer to Michael to come round on a Saturday afternoon and I'd show him how to use Twitter and Facebook.
Now, Adam, one of the interesting things to have occurred during the course of the week is the re-emergence of some information about Clive Palmer's popularity, especially up far north Queensland. What do you make of all of that?
Well, Clive Palmer is spending an enormous amount of his own money to promote his face and his image around the country. It's an interesting example of content-free politics. Can he launch a political party and get votes entirely as a facade? I mean, he has no policy. He simply says, vote for me and I'll make everything better. And some people will fall for that, I assume. I think he's mainly taking votes away from One Nation and the other sort of populist, right-wing populist parties, of which there are now a large number. He may succeed in getting himself elected again. He was a complete failure the first time he was elected, but he's hoping everyone has forgotten that. But it's an interesting example of whether you can buy a Senate seat with huge amounts of your own money and no policies. We'll see.
I think you can.
Maybe.
And he's done, he's done preference deal with the Liberal Party. There'll be some flow on there. If they don't get a full quota, there'll be some flow on.
The LNP in Queensland are always vulnerable to attacks from sort of right populist parties to their right, like One Nation or Bob Katter and now Clive Palmer. So, yes, they do feel they have to cover their flank by doing preference deals both with Palmer but also with One Nation, which exposes them to political danger elsewhere.
So, Adam, what's happened to One Nation? They've been fairly quiet so far in this campaign, ever since the Cash for Guns expose.
But hang on, they just got on a plane and they just happened to land there and then they happened to end up in some meetings and get on the piss and then start talking about
money.
Yes, you're quite right, the source, actually. Yeah,
Macca.
The source.
You're
the
quite
source.
Right. But what's happened to them, Adam?
Well, I think one of their problems is that they've now got much more competition chasing that sort of 10% of the far right boat. There are now half a dozen parties. There's Katter, there's Palmer, there's Fraser Anning, there's the Christian Democrats, the Australian Christians, the Shooters and Farmers, the Great Australia Party. There's a whole proliferation of Cory Bernardi's Conservatives. There's a whole proliferation of right-wing parties, some of them religious, some of them sort of white nationalist. And they're stealing some of One Nation's votes. And One Nation doesn't have their turf to themselves anymore as they used to have. And they've also got some of their own people, like Brian Burston, who was one of their senators, and Fraser Anning, who used to be in One Nation, now attacking them from the right. So I think Pauline Hanson's finding the going much tougher than she used to.
Can I ask, Adam, so all these parties on the right wing, on the very conservative side of politics, and, they're eating into the Liberal National Party vote, why is there not an equivalent thing happening on the left? Okay, you've got...
Well, the Greens have soaked up most of the vote that the far left used to get. I mean, we don't have a Communist Party running in elections anymore. There are a couple of small socialist groups, the Socialist Equality Party and the Socialist Alliance, but they poll very, very small votes. The Greens have soaked up virtually all the political turf to the left of Labor.
So does this say, Adam, that the voters represented by Labor and the Greens are fairly... And cut me a bit of slack here, are fairly satisfied with the representation that they receive and what they expect, whereas those represented by the coalition on the right are dissatisfied, hence all these smaller parties and, single-issue people, a grab bag of issues, that they're getting the attention because people are dissatisfied with the Libs and Nationals as opposed to Labor and, to a lesser extent, the Greens?
I think that's a very astute observation. I think that's exactly what's happening. The coalition's social base is unhappy and discontented and looking for alternatives, whereas the centre-left of politics is fairly united around either Labor or the Greens, depending on whether you're centre or left, I suppose.
Yeah.
There are a few. There's the Animal Justice Party and the Reason, what used to be the Sex Party, now called Reason Australia. There is some room for other sort of left of centre groups, but on the whole, most voters who are centre to left are either fairly loyal to Labor or fairly loyal to the Greens. So there's some swapping backwards and forwards between the two. But on the whole, I think those two parties offer a satisfactory home for most people on the left, whereas people on the right are clearly unhappy and looking for new homes.
And, of course, on the right, going back to the 50s, we had the DLP. Democratic.
Well, they're still around in a four-way.
They're still around, but, they were a right-wing party, originally part of the Labor Party. But it makes me think, that all these parties on the right vying for attention, outbidding themselves in stupidity and, how outrageous a statement can I make to get some attention?
Have a look at the advertisement that Fraser Anning has got the black man holding up a woman with a gun.
Yeah.
And the one with all the women in burqas. I mean, Fraser Anning is, for the first time for a long time, making an overtly racist, unashamedly racist pitch. We haven't seen that in Australian politics for quite a long time. Even Hanson doesn't overtly do that.
Well, the words are a bit big for Pauline.
She codes her racial message, whereas Fraser Anning is not even coding it. And this is a result of this intense competition for the far-right vote. He is trying to create a position further to the right than anybody else in the hope that that's where he'll find more votes.
Now, if you've just tuned in,
we see where this is led in other countries.
Now, if you've just tuned in, we are chatting with Adam Carr, our resident psephologist, and we're talking politics. All very interesting, Adam. Before we take a short break, what's been your political highlight in the last week?
Well, it's been an odd week, of course, because we had Easter and then Anzac Day, so we haven't had much in the way of campaigning over that period. I think of course, when Scott Morrison said, I'm not campaigning over Easter, what he meant was, I'm going to take the campaign to my church. So we had that extraordinary photo of the Prime Minister. I'm not sure exactly what he was doing, doing Pentecostal stuff in a Pentecostal church. But it was a very strange photograph for a Prime Minister to think was good publicity for himself. I think while people who share his religious views would, you know, think, oh, gosh, the Prime Minister's one of us, isn't that great? I think many, many other people would have found that photo a bit creepy. I think we try and keep a distinction between religion and politics in Australia. For a Prime Minister to so overtly advertise the fact that he belongs to a fairly small fringe fringe church like the Pentecostalists, I'm not sure that showed very good judgment, and I think a lot of people would have found it quite creepy.
And he invited them in.
He did, yes. And on Easter Sunday, when we were supposed to be having a break from campaigning, he thought it was politically a good move to have the cameras come and film him at church to show what a religious guy he is.
Yeah, look, I think, you know, for people of faith and in varying degrees, they'll think that was a good thing. You know, they'll go, that's great, you know, he's one of us. I do believe the majority, I think the majority of Australians would be a bit ambivalent about it, but I think there'd be a very sizable portion, probably about a third, who'd go, you know what, I don't like that. Because
I'm not sure that will include, I'm not saying it's going to cost him a lot of votes. I think most of the people who found it creepy would not be Liberal voters anyway, but I don't think it's advancing his cause any, which is presumably why he thought it was a good thing to do.
Yeah. Now, we've got
a lot of messages here, Macca.
A lot of messages. There was an altercation with a One Nation support. Well, actually, it wasn't a One Nation support. Well, it might have been. When Fraser Anning spoke to a crowd in Cronulla, a photographer was punched at the Anning conference. A News Corporation, News Corp's photographer, who had his shirt ripped by the by the agitator.
He did.
Yeah.
What did you make of all
Anning,
of those?
As I was saying before, Anning is attracting a very, very far-right following.
Yeah.
And we saw the incident with Egg Boy.
Yeah.
I'm not necessarily defending hitting politicians with eggs, but the violent reaction against what was, after all, a fairly harmless prank.
Yeah.
The only person who might have been seriously injured was Egg Boy himself by the entourage that follow Fraser Anning around, and this seems to be another example of it. And this, again, echoes what we're seeing with Trump in the United States. The Trumpification of the right wing in Australia is happening, and it's a bit alarming.
Just to change subjects, Adam, social media. Do you believe that social media is playing a role in this election? And if so, what how is that different from previous elections?
Well, it's becoming more and more important at every election, and you can see that by the enormous social media buys that all the parties that can afford it are doing. You used to see full-page advertisements in the newspapers as the principal form, and then that was followed by then television advertising as the principal form, and we still have both of those, but internet advertising is now becoming extremely important, particularly targeting young people who, on the whole, don't spend their days reading newspapers and even don't watch as much TV as they used to, and also have shorter attention spans. So we now have the primary advertising form in this election is sort of, you know, the 10-second social media blast.
Does that explain why I'm not getting anything in my letterbox anymore?
Well, there's still the traditional letterbox dumps, but all the parties know that all that traditional stuff is less and less effective.
Well, I mean, week three into the election campaign, and I've received one thing, and it happened to be a non-branded piece of advertising.
What seat do you live in?
McNamara.
And
when I actually examined it very carefully, so it was an anti-Labor brochure, but when I examined it carefully, it was actually authorised by the Liberal Party. I thought it was very odd. There's no Liberal branding on it whatsoever.
McNamara is a hotly contested seat, as you know. It's a hotly contested three-way contest. And the fact that your letterbox is not stuffed full of brochures from all three parties tells you where they're spending their advertising budget.
Social media.
Well, you see, they know, the Liberals and the Greens and Labor, they know that that house is a hotbed and in more ways than one, but that they know that house, there's no point. I'm interested, Adam, we're actually covering McNamara after 11 o'clock. We have Josh Burns and Steph Hodgins-May from the Greens, Josh from Labor.
Kate Ashmore's pulled out.
Kate Ashmore. No, she's not available. She's too busy selling Lamingtons in Elstonwick.
Caulfield, actually.
Caulfield. Go on.
I was going to say, Kate Ashmore's had a bad campaign so far.
Yeah.
Even at the Jewish community debate, which should have been her natural turf, she made a very poor impression on people. I wasn't there, but I'm told by many people who were that she made a very poor impression. And she's had a number of unfortunate comments dug up to use against her. So she may be keeping a low profile for a while.
She actually made one about... about teaching staff in private schools were vastly superior to teachers in state schools. Now, you know, I actually liken Kate Ashmore to a bit like Ashmore Reef. It's disappearing. It's disappearing. It's on the map, but no one actually knows where it is.
Yeah, she did say that quite a long time ago. But as we were saying earlier, it's an example of how thorough candidate research now is, that something you said quite a long time ago, and I believe she wrote that under her maiden name, so it wasn't even under the name Kate Ashmore.
Right.
But someone nevertheless found it. And this is one of the risks now that all candidates have to face, is that your whole history on social media and in print media and everywhere is going to be searched, and anything you've said in the past or written in the past that contradicts what you're currently arguing or your party argues is going to be used against you. But McNamara and Higgins are both, I live in Higgins, are both being very closely fought, and yet the volume of paper in the letterbox is not nearly what it used to be. And I think that's an indication of how the way parties conduct election campaigns is changing very, very radically.
Well, we're doing our bit. As I said, we're doing McNamara today after 11, and next week is Higgins. And we do have the full suite of, we have Labor, Liberal and Greens next week for Higgins.
Very good.
So, look, we're going to let you go, Adam. We look forward to your comment. We'll have a chat with you again next week.
Let's talk about the Senate next time.
Yeah, the Senate.
We're happy to do that. But before you do go, Adam, just what's your sort of final score of the performance over the last week of both parties?
Well, as I said earlier, it's not really been a very productive week because of the Easter and Anzac Day. The rolls are now closed, nominations have closed, pre-poll voting starts on Monday, and I think the final sprint of the campaign will begin then. And as we know from many studies, most voters don't start paying attention to election campaigns until the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
So I think we're going to be entering the serious phase of the campaign from Monday when pre-poll voting starts, because a high proportion of people vote pre-poll, so it becomes, we really are into the main game on Monday.
Good on you, Adam. We always enjoy your insights.
Thank you.
Next week we'll talk about the Senate, and we'll also ask for your reflections on the coming week's political activities.
And any listener who knows where Ashmore Reef is, let us know.
Ashmore or Cartier Reef.
Yes.
Adam Carr, thank you very much for your time. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.